Welcome to Clifton Health on Air. I'm your host, Danielle.
And I'm your co-host, Lauren. And with us today is our co-host, Crystal, and also Tom Sadowski, social worker for the Clifton Health Department, and Rob Kowalski, board-certified behavior analyst. Welcome.
Hello.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Hello, everybody. Good to be back.
Yeah, thank you so much for being on our podcast again, and we're so happy to have you on the podcast for the first time. And we're here because we're talking about Autism Awareness Month, right? April is Autism Awareness Month. And so what do you guys do on a daily basis? And why is this important to you?
So for me, Tom here, I started working with children and individuals on the autism spectrum disorder in 2013 after graduating from Montclair State University. And I did not know much about the disorder or therapy or anything pertaining to special education back then. But the more that I worked with the professionals in the field, the more I worked with clients and different students, the more passion I developed for the population. And still today, 12 years later, I am still working and doing ABA therapy, bringing in different after-school programs and classes for the special education students. And, you know, it's something that sticks with you once you're in the field, and you're always trying to make it better and bigger and develop it even more.
That's awesome. And how about you, Rob?
Yeah, so I got started about 10 years ago, around 2015. Just like Tom over here, I started as a paraprofessional at a special needs school, and that was a little bit eye-opening. I came from like the different background because I wanted to be a teacher and had no idea what special needs was and was just kind of looking for a job, and it was a little bit eye-opening for me. So to see the different styles of teaching, you know, see how therapies work. I didn't know what a speech therapist was. I didn't know what an OT, PT, or even a counselor did. You know, I wanted to teach social studies. And so, you know, did that, was paraprofessional, went on to, you know, become a teacher, but I kind of missed it. You know, working with the general education population was great, but ended up going back to school to become board certified behavior analyst, and I loved it ever since. So now I work with kids in home and kids in a school at a high school, and I also work with adults. So love every second of it.
Awesome. Thank you both. And can you just briefly explain what is autism?
Yeah, so autism is a neurological disorder. It's a disorder that has a very vast, I would say, spectrum to it. I know that that's like the code word that everybody likes to use. But there are basically certain tenets and certain principles that, you know, if your child or adult is facing, such as, you know, impaired speech or trouble vocalizing certain words, or if there's a behavior struggle, or if there is some gross motor like limitations, you know, those are just three examples. There is about eight or nine type of different tenets that you have to get through to be classified as autism. Okay. You know, the reach of autism right now within the DSM-5 is so broad and vast that, you know, it's big. You know, okay. There's no other way to describe it. So a lot of people are being diagnosed with autism that they weren't being diagnosed 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. And that might continue until they make more of a standard or more of a limited approach.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point that Rob makes. And, you know, statistics today show that one in every 34 children in the United States will be born and diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder. But I think the important thing to keep in mind is that there are a lot of different therapies, assessments, and things that you can do starting at a very early age to help a child, specifically with early intervention. And as Rob mentioned, speech therapy, occupational and physical therapy as well. And the other important thing to keep in mind is that it is a spectrum. You can have somebody who's on the autism spectrum that can go to school and complete a PhD degree. And then you do have individuals that are nonverbal and do have lower cognitive function. So, you know, early intervention is key, and, you know, continuous service as well.
That's great. And I'm curious about some of the things you mentioned earlier on. You mentioned, Tom, that you worked with doing ABA therapy. Could you describe what that is for listeners that might not know?
Sure. So ABA therapy stands for Applied Behavioral Analysis. And, you know, it starts as early as, I'd say, what, 4 or 5 years old, Rob, typically?
Yeah.
They can start anywhere.
Could have done it even to 3.
Yeah, 3 years old. And it's part of that early intervention portion of special education. And, you know, it really pertains to different aspects. Language development, life skills, academic work. But it also, like, implies different behavioral techniques and education. So you have positive reinforcements where you present your student or client with, like, a positive, you know, like, option, a thing that they want to work for, whether it's something that, you know, they like to snack on, maybe it's a toy or something that they just look forward to having throughout the day, and it motivates them to complete whatever task they're presented with.
Okay, thanks for explaining that. And also, you mentioned, Rob, there's two of you, so... Rob, you mentioned that there are multiple tenets, but it's a broad spectrum for diagnosing people, and so a lot of people are being diagnosed. Could you talk a bit more about the path to diagnosis and maybe what we should be looking out for or when you should start to seek professionals to help diagnose if you're...
Yeah, so I would say, generally speaking, most parents, and I would say most physicians, would say starting to look around the age of 2. Generally speaking, what happens a lot of the times is that physicians or parents will start to look at, is there language development? Are they following directions? Are they able to hold eye contact? Are they not able to understand certain words? So, you know, they call it the terrible 2s, and people get this misconstrued saying, like, oh, it's just, you know, they're young or they're not... they're just late bloomers. That's the word they hear a lot. So around that time, parents can bring them to the doctor. It could be a pediatrician. Mm-hmm. It could be a social worker. It could be a psychologist. A neurologist is also a big one. But there's about 8 or 9 people that can diagnose, you know, people with autism in general. And, you know, there's different tests to do there, you know, that they can take during that, different assessments. But yeah, I would say with the path towards getting diagnosed has been broadened, you know, more so than ever. I know even in certain states, a speech therapist could even diagnose a client with autism. Yeah.
Wow. And when a person does get a diagnosis, what would their next step be, or what would the resource they have to reach out to be?
Yeah, I would say, generally speaking, it all depends on the individual, like, and what their needs are, because, you know, like Tom just said, there's it's a huge, vast spectrum. You have some children 2, 3, 4 years old, and they're just developmentally delayed on their speech, and they might have issues with expressive or receptive language, and so that would be more of a speech therapist, you know, working with them. Or if they're having issues with their motor function, and, you know, be it oral motor or gross motor, or even so in that sentence, it would probably be an OT or even a PT would step in. So it all depends on what the learner needs, and what, you know, I would even say the pediatrician or whoever diagnosed them would say, be like, hey, maybe you need to look at an OT, PT, or speech. You know, the school's a great avenue as well. I know that young, it's a little difficult sometimes because they're in pre-K, but you can even look at this. They're the current IEP team, or the CST, they call themselves, child study team, and they can provide you resources for that. Behavior issue, my way, speech, OT, PT, they have their own avenues, and all of us can work together towards that.
And I think another interesting bit of information is when the child is very young, lack of eye contact, a lot of parents will see that, or even like auditory processing, like they think the child's not listening or not hearing what someone's saying to them, but it can be an early indicator of a pre-diagnosis. But another thing to keep in mind is in the state of New Jersey and New York, a lot of people come to this area for services from the entire country because we have so many different options, whether it's speech, whether it's a neurologist, occupational therapy or physical therapy, and all those things. So we have a lot of people that come from different states just for the services in our area as well.
Absolutely. That's amazing to hear that New Jersey is kind of one of the forefronts in New York to have these services. And it's Autism Awareness Month. Why is it so important to highlight autism as an awareness month?
I think Autism Awareness Month is very important because it gives families, it gives individuals who are diagnosed, professionals, that time frame to sit down, to educate others, because there are so many people that are still unaware of what autism spectrum disorder is. So it, you know, it gives people and communities the opportunity to create events, to create different programs and classes and different things of that nature to educate people and, you know, show them what autism is and that there are ways to help those people that are diagnosed with the disorder.
Yeah, I would have to agree. I think Autism Awareness Month was designed as a way to advertise and to just make people aware about the current diagnosis of autism. There wasn't a lot of information. Like I said, I came into education thinking I was going to be teaching kids about, you know, the history of Rome and, you know, how the United States was founded. And that's not what it was. I had no idea what autism was. I had no idea what Down syndrome was, or, you know, cyclothemia, or you go down the list of all those different diagnoses. So I think it's Autism Awareness has Open Month has proved that it's a good thing to get that information out there. But I would also say that autism is now in the zeitgeist of people's awareness. I was just watching last night, was it the third season of Love on the Spectrum?
Yes, same.
Yeah, so you would never have seen that before. Like 50 or 60 years ago, that show would never exist, one. Two, they would name those characters in such a way that would call them slow. They would call them, you know, idiots, or they would say like, oh, that's just Tommy, you know, that kind of thing. Not saying you, Tom. but, you know, in general, now it's more of like, oh, he's autistic. I think, you know, just recently, maybe a year or two ago, Sesame Street. Mm-hmm. Sesame Street actually has an autistic character now, and you have all these different shows now that show that. Was it The Good Doctors, another one?
Yep. Yeah. That's another one, yeah.
So now you have that are celebrating the difference and not hiding it anymore. So yeah. I think almost Autism Awareness Month kind of has to, like, change.
Yeah.
Because the awareness is out there, and now it's more of, like, what do we do?
Right.
Yeah, and even, like, when you look at the timeline with, like, what Rob was saying, 25, 30 years ago, people didn't know what autism was. They thought the parents weren't giving the child enough attention during their key developmental stages of life, or, you know, like they were just mistreating them and different things of that nature. But, you know, once we give it more awareness and, you know, show people that there's a way to educate others and, you know, teach them about different therapies and assessments and things of that nature, it's so helpful. I mean, there are so many different people, professionals, and like very popular people that are diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder. I believe Albert Einstein was diagnosed with it. Elon Musk is someone else who's diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder. So it's important to keep in mind that you just don't know who may have a diagnosis.
That's so true. I think it's so important to highlight other individuals and just do away with those politically incorrect phrases that have been used towards people with autism, right? Like, you mentioned being called slow, stupid, things that just aren't representative. I think another term, too, that is done away with now is Asperger's syndrome. So could you talk a little bit more about why that is?
Yeah, I would say the main issue about Asperger's was that it was used as a term for highly functioning, you know, people. You know, so autism right now, as it's diagnosed, is a broad spectrum. There, I think, as Tom elucidated before, is that there are people that are nonverbal, using a device, and can barely tie their shoes. And then you have other people that are finishing up their PhDs in college, and they're doctors themselves. So you have this broad spectrum. So you had, I would say, a certain segment of that spectrum that said, I don't want to be called what those people are being called, so call me Asperger's. So that's where that term kind of, you know, propagated. Now it's kind of not the same anymore. And that's for a variety of factors, including services and insurance have kind of done away with it. You know, the IEPs themselves, there's no term ever called an Asperger you know, it's always ASD. It's always, you know, ERI. It's always OHI. It's not, you don't see Asperger everywhere.
Yeah, I agree with that. And even like today, you don't hear people, it's not as politically correct to say special needs or autism. They'll say, you know, neurodiverse or something along those lines to show more respect towards the different disorders.
All right. So listening to that, it's basically people had to change their language, their behavior towards it. And you mentioned before that Autism Awareness Month has done that, right? It has given awareness, but there are some, you know, some next steps that we have to do. What do you think are some next steps that as a community in general can do to amplify just the goal of breaking the stigma, breaking some barriers within the autism community?
I think one thing that's important to keep in mind is workforce development. I think a lot of employers are still unaware of what it's like to be on the spectrum and like what needs are necessary in the workplace. So maybe having trainings at your job, and just looking at different ways of like training your staff to work with someone who may be on the spectrum as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm going to come from it from a different angle.
Okay.
So I'm going to say that we have to start looking at it from the insurance aspect. So many of these people and clients of mine are getting there through Medicaid or through insurance, be them Aetna, United, Horizon. And so what we're starting to see, which is kind of interesting, is that a lot of times when they're young, you know, parents, last thing you want to hear is that your child is diagnosed with something. Doesn't matter what it is, but autism, you know, because it's a lifelong, not just a disability, but an ability just that you do things differently. But what that happens is parents, they have this anxiety saying, what's going to happen? What do we do? Am I going to have to take care of them? How are we going to work with the, you know, how am I going to get him a job? He's going to be toilet trained. There's a bunch of things, thoughts that go through their head. So they think it's the end of the world. But as we've started to see more and more of, is that autism has become this almost, it's going to sound bad, but it's almost like a saving grace. It's the key buzzword for insurance and for schools now. Because the moment your child or adult is diagnosed with autism, a lot of services open up, which has led to almost this over generalization of just diagnosing everybody with autism. Why is that happening? That's happening because the insurance companies and even the schools themselves have developed this system saying, if you're autistic, you get the X, A through Z. If you're bipolar, you only get A through D. That's the amount of services you can get. So I have one example. I do have a client that, you know, was diagnosed with autism at 17 or 16. So around that age group, which is kind of unusual.
Is that late?
That's a little late. Like, you can be diagnosed later in life, but, you know, when you're diagnosed with another, you know, particular diagnosis, and then all of a sudden you're diagnosed with autism, you know, a lot has to do with is the services that are available. And so that's really what's turning into is that the insurances are basically saying, and even the schools are saying, if you have this diagnosis, we're going to do it. We're going to give you all the things that you might want. But if you have this over here, you're not going to get what you might need, might require. So you see these doctors starting to say, like, well, I'll just give you autism. I'll give you the diagnosis of autism. And parents want that. They want that in the IEP. They want the, you know, the more time to do homework, the modifications for their tests. They want the support from the child study team, where you might not necessarily get that from a 504, you know, or another document for accommodations. Remember, I would also like to point out that IEPs, they don't, when you turn 18 or 21 and you want to move on to college, the colleges don't have the right to look at your IEP unless you say so. So a lot of parents were saying, hey, I want the IEP until they're a senior, pull the IEP, and then they go to college. And nobody can tell the difference between A from one student versus an A from another student.
And just really quickly, would you be able to clarify IEP? You mentioned that a few times.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
So an IEP is an individualized education plan. So that document is basically for those with a diagnosis. It doesn't mean everybody with a diagnosis has an IEP. But what it does stand for is that in a school, is that a student will receive an IEP when they're tested by the child study team. That could be a social worker, a school psychologist, an LDTC, which is a learning disabilities teacher consultant. I know a lot of acronyms.
Yeah.
Public health had a lot of acronyms.
Yeah. So they're the child study team, and they're the IEP team. And then the related service providers are those that come from the IEP, be it the occupational therapist, physical therapist, speech therapist, a counselor can be on there, a behavior analyst like myself. Mm-hmm. So we are kind of the related service providers. But that document kind of stipulates how the student, what services the student is going to get, and what is the district or the school required to provide. It's a legal document. So this is where a lot of, you know, unfortunately, a lot of suits sometimes come from if parents disagree with the document or if they disagree with the services. Now, a 504 is something that is all accommodation. So accommodation versus modification is a little bit different. I don't want to get so deep into the school realm, but...
Not yet.
Yeah.
That's a different episode.
But a 504 is kind of basically a document that not only does the school provide, but also the doctor or pediatrician or somebody can provide, saying, hey, this kid has anxiety, for example. They might need half, like 50% more time on a test versus a modification. So that's accommodation, or sitting in the front of the room, or sitting close to the teacher. It's not affecting the lesson. It's not affecting the work. You're still getting the same worksheet or the same paper that everyone else is getting. So that's an accommodation versus a modification that IEP has. It states all the goals. It states all the related service providers, gives us data to provide to the parent, and to also if there's a lawyer advocate. But also what an IEP does is modifies the work. So for example, if a worksheet is a fill in the blank and it has a word bank, it might, a modified part of that could be the word bank, instead of 10 answers are in it, there's only 5. So it modifies the work, but the grade itself, you know, that goes into the report card is still the same. You can't tell the difference. It's not saying like, oh, this is modified. No, there's no difference between one student and another.
Wow, so much information.
You were talking about how it seems like with the awareness that's been going on currently of autism, there are more people being diagnosed and there are a lot of services that are available. But it seems like then the other neurodiverse or children or people in general aren't experiencing the same. You mentioned bipolar disorder, Down syndrome, psychothemia, I think?
Yeah, psychothemia, yeah.
Okay, so some of those, maybe we have to continue to work on those. But Tom, you also talk about next steps being workforce development. And so what could you see in the future?
Yeah, I think we definitely need more vocational training outside of just like training the individual on, you know, proper social skills, workplace etiquette, job training skills, things of that nature, but also, you know, the people and environment he or she will work in, training those individuals or educating them on what they can expect, you know, if that person has a sensitivity to sound or, you know, light or anything of that nature, you know, just to be aware of that stuff.
Back to Rob. I know you talked about when a person has an IEP in, let's say, senior year, and then it gets pulled, am I saying that correctly, for colleges? How can an individual who has an IEP advocate for themselves to get, I guess, proper resources in colleges?
So right now in most colleges, there is supports available, but not through an IEP. So an IEP is only through K through, you know, senior year. So there are some individuals that do stay until they're 21, because as of right now, public schools have to offer till 21 if available. But once they get to college, a 504 is generally placed instead of a IEP, just because, you know, college is not required. It's not a requirement that you have to go to college. You know, it's hard to provide a lot of those services while you're in college. At that time, usually if you're 18, 21, a lot of those services are being, you know, not taken back, but they're starting to slowly fade out in a lot of ways. not just by insurance companies, but also just by providers themselves. Okay. Just the idea is that, you know, if you've been having 10 years of OT or 5 years of ABA up until that point, you would start to you want them to become more independent. So you don't want them to be a lifelong dependency on this therapy. So usually around that age, you start to fade out. Same thing with the IEP. It fades out. You go to college, you get a 504, and that could be, like listed before, you know, closer ward office time with the professor or or something like that.
It could be something different. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you for that explanation.
I think it's important to also add that a lot of colleges do have programs now. For example, Montclair State has the Certificate for General Education Studies program that they just rolled out this past fall. They have 8 students that are diagnosed with an intellectual disability. And with this program, it allows them to basically receive a college education and experience. It's a 2-year program, more so. And it allows them to have an internship, take part in different, you know, programs and activities on campus. Bergen Community College has the Turning Point program. That does a lot of great work. Probably one of the best college programs in the state. Passaic County Community College also has a transition center. The Passaic County Community College program focuses more on culinary programming. So there are different options. I think it's, correct me if I'm wrong, Rob, it may be a state requirement now for colleges to have some form of programming for individuals.
I would say that the county colleges might, but I wouldn't necessarily say the private colleges do. You know, I don't know, have knowledge of Rutgers, although Rutgers does have a school devoted to those K through senior year, but they don't necessarily have something for college bound.
Got it. Awesome. Thanks for that explanation. I know we at the Clifton Health Department presented to those students at MSU. And they're just wonderful.
They were awesome.
They're awesome. So now let's talk about, we talked a lot about children. What is it like getting an autism diagnosis as an adult, though? Is it different? Is there programs out there that need to be seen more, or what is it like?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on your level of functionality as an adult also, and, you know, your overall understanding and education of the disorder. You have adults that, you know, may just give off, you know, like a sense of shyness, and they're functioning perfectly fine throughout society. They have a full-time job, a family. And then on the other hand, you may have an adult who may not be of the same cognitive age as he is, you know, physically, but you know, it really depends on their overall understanding, their support system, whether, you know, in their family, their job, overall. Yeah, so I really think it comes down to that.
You talked about support system. Why is that so important?
Yeah, especially as an adult, I would say that it's probably the most important, because as a child, as a kid, you have the school. You generally have a lot of resources available to you through the school, through the town, through the all those organizations. Generally speaking, a lot of outside providers like myself or OTPT speech, they work with more children. But as you grow older, those generally start to dry up. And it's has a lot to do with the fact of money. Generally speaking, like I just said, is insurance providers, they pay up until, you know, everybody's different, but usually around mid-20s or early 20s, they start to say, hey, fade out the therapies, move on. So that leads to a lot of providers working mainly with children. And there's a lot to do with that. It means that parents are usually in the picture. You're helping support that child or that client. There's somebody, usually a CMO worker, if that's necessary for that individual, that's a case manager, you know, from the state, that will support them if they have, be it Medicaid or SSI, Social Security, or even Perform Care, which is the state's basically way of trying to provide them services in such a way. Versus when you get to an adult, remember, your parents start to get a little bit older. They're retired. They're starting to think about downsizing or moving. Services are not as widespread. The insurance, you know, you lose insurance at 26. So all these factors start to come in, and it's less money for the providers. They're not really necessarily trained, a lot of them, to work with adults. And also, just in general, you don't see as many adults being in those therapies because they're being moved off of their insurance anyway. So it's a little bit difficult right now for adults with autism, but I think it's getting a little bit better.
Yeah, I agree with Rob. And I think another area of support that we have to think about is the caregiver, the guardian, or the parent as well. I think, you know, for an example, a parent who just had a child that was diagnosed on the autism spectrum disorder, going to a support group, going to a workshop, anything like that, gives you the opportunity to meet people, meet professionals or other parents that work with individuals that are diagnosed on the autism spectrum, may have a child who is already on the autism spectrum disorder, and learn from them. There's nothing better than firsthand experience and knowledge in that area.
You mentioned some people phasing out and people that do have those later diagnoses, not maybe already are better equipped to go through life. So the diagnosis is kind of an explanation of maybe some of their difficulties or complications growing up or even still. So for people who are phasing out of these therapies, because you mentioned like the ABA therapy, the goal is to eventually be independent and end those therapies. So what is the next step for someone that might be transitioning, or maybe they're done with high school and, you know, their senior year and they're moving on, but they're not quite there yet? So what kind of resources are there for people that fall in that kind of gap?
Right, that's a great question. So for anyone that graduates high school and is in the age range of, like, you know, 18 to 21 and post 21, the county does have a vocational program also that can assist with employment or job training. You can also reach out to the Division of Developmental Disabilities for resources and information. It's very important to always keep in touch with your school administration. I'm sure as Rob can also follow up on, just for other information and resources and avenues to go down for help.
Yeah, I would say right now is kind of like if you're an adult with disabilities right now and you're looking for that added support, this is one of probably the best times to start looking in years, I would say. So this is more of a kind of like a weird answer, roundabout answer, but I'm going to kind of give it. So just to give you an example right now, what's happening in schools is, you know, we're losing a lot of budget cuts coming down the pipe. And so part of that has to do with federal funding. But another part of it that people are not really talking about is the birth rate. So a lot of people right now, let's say, for example, you're in Clifton. Passaic, I used to teach there right next door, is losing about 200 kids a year. So that's 200 less kids. They're thinking about closing schools, you know. Middletown is closing about two or three schools. I think it's two, unless they do a 10% tax hike. You also have Bloomingdale, who's closing down a school, and they're adding on to their middle school to, you know, they say it's to refurbish, but really has to do with the birth rate. There's not enough kids coming in, you know, as they thought they were. You know, and that has a lot to do with how much kids are costing. It has a lot much to do with, you know, just people are getting older. You know, currently right now the average age in the United States is rising, you know. So in general, when you look at that, you have a lot of providers, like I said, they're saying to themselves, okay, so we used to have this problem, which was we have too many clients, too many kids to service. But now you're getting the pot's getting a little bit smaller. So now you're having providers almost forced to start working with adults because there's not enough kids to work with in certain areas. So right now, you have a lot of resources going towards the adult population because you got to look where the client is going, and they're getting older. So, for example, for myself, you know, we have the transition coordinator and the teacher I work with in Parsippany. We started our own company. So we decided to do social skills groups because we had the same problem with our students. We do all this work with them every year, and then they get out into the big mean world, and they have nothing to do. They might have a job for a couple hours, which is great. They might have a little day program that they go to, but at night they're sitting at home on their iPad. So I'm going to tell you right now, that kills me, because we work so hard to get them to be independent just for them to sit in front of a screen all day. So we said, no, we're gonna do this. So we started hosting social skills groups, and those kinds of social skills groups are propping up all over the place. We're not the first. I know the big one in New Jersey, you know, the ARC is a big one, but also another big one is JTB, Just the Beginning, in Bergen County. And they're a great group that we work with. But, you know, you have these groups propping up just because, you know, you have these clientele that need that support, but also need that transition period as well.
Yeah, what Rob just said is completely accurate. If you have a child that's on the spectrum and they're not receiving the support and services that are offered, especially after school, you'll see regression in behavior and language and social skills, communication, all these different things. Even here in the Clifton Health Department, you know, we've put together different classes and programs in the past 2 years pertaining to art therapy, music therapy, adaptive sports, because giving these children an opportunity to do something after school rather than just going home and sitting on their iPad or watching TV all day is really beneficial. And it continues to teach them. It continues to give them an opportunity to socialize and learn new things as well.
I think we have the two most knowledgeable people on this topic here with us today. I just wanted to make sure that we hit all our questions here. What are some challenges that you may be facing?
I would say right now, the birth rate hasn't hit completely as hard. It's just that we're seeing it in the schools at that level.
Okay.
Because prior, you know, during COVID, it's a great example. Just the agencies I work for and the companies I work for that do in-home therapy, we had a 6-month waiting list, you know, to see me, you know, as a BCBA.
Right.
And that could be same thing with OT, PT, and speech. That is, you know, nothing to do that BCBAs are so super special. It's just that there's just not enough providers.
Right.
But that waiting list has started to dwindle, let's say. And you're starting to see amongst these companies, they can't be as, you know, flippant at being like, well, if they want to wait, they can go somewhere else. Now you're starting to see companies start to cater to people a little bit more. Well, I know you're a little bit out our area, but I'll see if I can get you somebody. Oh, we can try this. So there's starting to become this, you know, impasse that we haven't faced before, which was there's not as many clients as we thought they were. Now, of course, there's still going to be kids. They're still going to be propping up, but it's not as, you know, prolific as it once was. But I would say, you know, it's almost the issues are starting to come up with the funding, particularly with the insurance, okay. I would say.
So I'm just thinking of college students in education right now. Do you think they should also be looking towards special education too to help with this kind of gap as well? Like, is there enough providers? Is there enough staff?
I think educating yourself is very important. The more tools you can add to your toolbox, the better it is for you and the better it is for the students that you work with, because you may be a general education teacher, mm-hmm. and you may have a student that's undiagnosed still in your classroom, unknown. But I think as long as you educate yourself on different, you know, therapies, services, educational techniques, the better it is for you.
Yeah, I think there's a shortage of special education teachers. I know in my own district, even though we're cutting, they're probably still looking for a special education teacher or a paraprofessional to look into that. But I've always stated to all teachers, or, you know, their student teaching or people looking towards that, I said, if it was me, I would go into the therapies. The reason for that is that if you want to work into a school, you can. But as a teacher, once you're locked into being an educator, you're locked in. There's not a lot of movement outside of that. But if you're a therapist, be it OT, PT, speech, a counselor, a school psychologist, a BCBA, you can work in a school, you can work in home, you can work in a hospital or clinic, and you have that ability to move laterally and also vertically as well.
Thank you for sharing that. Would you be able to speak a little bit more about how you've worked with us here at the Clifton Health Department in the past and what those events might have looked like?
So Clifton has been great. I have no complaints with Clifton. They've really opened up their arms to the community, really showed that how a town could handle this kind of influx of adults that need, not just adults, but children as well, that need support and need help, be it with information or be it with classes. So, you know, I was happy to be a part of that in some small way, where I you know, did one presentation in January, and I hope to do more.
Yeah, and I'm grateful that Rob was able to present to our public. It was a great presentation. I think we had about 20 to 25 residents come out for that. So kudos to him and his coworkers that did come out. We try to do a lot for the community. We have a public presenter come and speak on different topics bimonthly, I'd say, at our senior center. It gives the community the opportunity to come and learn about the topic, ask questions, get resources from the professional. So we're trying to do a lot. Like I mentioned earlier, we do a lot of classes for kids that are diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder, and we're looking forward to continuing those programs as well. We actually currently also work with Banyan High School in Little Falls. And pertaining to Banyan High School, we've completed our Mindfulness for Kids program there. Our Mindfulness for Kids program is a youth mental health program that really teaches relaxation, different techniques to lower anxiety. It's something that a lot of these kids face on a day-to-day basis, right? Different things that cause anxiety and stress in their lives that don't do the same for a typical person. So it's been a huge success, and we've actually started to allow 3 students from Banyan High School's 18 to 21 Life Academy program to come to our office every Monday for an hour and help our admin staff with different tasks, and it's gone phenomenal. So we're really happy what we've done.
Are there any upcoming events that someone from Clifton or Little Falls might be able to attend?
We're holding our annual Autism Awareness Touch a Truck event. It's a really fun event. We have all of our city municipal agencies come out with their vehicles and employees as well. And it gives families and kids the opportunity to learn more about what these individuals do. You know, like I mentioned earlier, a lot of the kids have auditory sensitivity. So, you know, they hear a horn, or if they have sensitivity to the lights or anything like that. It's a sensory friendly event as well. We'll have a face painter, we'll have a food truck there, we'll have a few vendors to give out information to families that are looking for help in different areas, and it's an all-out great event. We're really excited for it, and yeah, we hope you can make it.
We're super excited for that event, and it's going to be absolutely amazing, so hopefully you can catch any of our events, actually, with our social services team and all the events we have planned here at the Clifton Health Department for those events that are coming up. And we'll be sure to put the flyer or link to the flyer to all of these events in the bio of our podcast. And we just want to say thank you so much, Rob, for being our guest. And thank you, Tom, for being on our podcast again. Is there any final words or any resources you would like to share to those listeners?
So aspiringabilitiesllc.com. We have a social skills group event every week, usually in Morris County or Passaic County. You know, we now service all adults over the age of 21 outside of school through DDD money or private pay or anything like that. So if you want to come out, you know, have some fun and enjoy.
And I just want to say happy Autism Awareness Month to everyone. And, you know, if you have any questions pertaining to autism or disabilities, please feel free to reach out to the Clifton Health Department and ask to speak to me. I'd be happy to help you out.
Thank you all for listening. If you have any questions related to Autism Awareness Month or any questions that we have talked about today on this podcast, feel free to reach out to us. And I just want to thank you all for being here. And thank you all for listening. I hope you have an amazing Autism Awareness Month. And Lauren, take us out.
Don't forget to tune in to our podcast every other week for a new episode. You may visit our website at www.cliftonnj.org. Follow us on social media. We are on Facebook and Instagram. Our handle is Clifton Health. If you have any questions, you can email us at health@cliftonnj.org. And before we leave today, let us ask ourselves, did you make a difference in someone's life today?